Welcome to Energy Unplugged, the go-to podcast focusing on the global energy transition. My name is Evangelos Gazis, and I'm Aurora's head of Southeast Europe based in our office in Athens. I'm very happy to be joined today in the show by Charlotte Johnson, Chief of Staff and Global Head of Markets at Kraken Flex Limited, which is part of the Octopus Energy Group, providing real-time distributed energy resource management and distribution network monitoring technology. Charlotte has over 8 years of experience in the energy and sustainability space. Charlotte, welcome to Energy Unplugged. Very delighted you have joined us. Today, we will be discussing about flexible assets, their markets, and specifically batteries. Flexible assets are quite important in energy systems, balancing intermittent energy sources like renewables, but also supporting the grid. Before we dive into our discussion, I would like to invite you, Charlotte, to provide an overview of Kraken's activities and products.
Yeah, so Kraken covers multiple parts of the energy ecosystem. So we cover everything on the generation side, which can be connecting to an asset, controlling an asset, and then optimizing an asset in different markets. So an asset can be anything in the home, like EVs, heat pumps, home batteries, smart thermostats, or it could be anything on the generation side of grid scale assets. So solar, wind, and storage are the main ones. We then also do the distribution network monitoring, which I think you've already mentioned. Mm-hmm. So that kind of ability to help DNOs or distribution network operators really understand what is happening on their local networks. And I think the real kind of challenge they face is that as you add more embedded generation to the system, you move from a world where you just had large thermal plants generating electricity and sending it to end consumers in one place. So you didn't necessarily need to know how much capacity you had or any kind of congestion issues because it was the same thing every day at the same time. But as you add obviously more intermittent generation to the system, a lot of DNOs don't necessarily have the visibility of what's happening. So what we're really trying to provide there is that kind of monitoring, transparency, and understanding where congestion is on the network. Then the final kind of piece of the puzzle to Kraken is very much on the consumer side, where we have everything relating to consumer management. So a CIS system, billing, meter data management, and all of that is licensed to energy suppliers.
And which regions are you active in?
So our biggest region is the UK. And I think if you think about storage, the UK market has been the most mature and it's been around the last kind of 10 years. But we've now started to look at a few countries in Europe. So Germany and Italy, for example. We're live in Japan. We're live in Australia, New Zealand, Canada, the US. And then we're also live in a few other countries in Europe with our network offering, which is Cyprus, Switzerland, Norway, and Germany. I think I've covered all of them there.
Mm. And I guess the main drivers that lead you into a certain country are a combination of existing markets, but also policy, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a few things. There's policy and regulation, the kind of markets that are available. So is there a wholesale market? Is there a real-time market? Are there ancillary services? And then also the presence of some of our existing customers. So a lot of the work we're doing at the moment is, if you think about UK asset owners that have storage, or traders as well, actually, that are operating storage assets in the UK, they're really now starting to look at other geographies. So a lot of our work is going with them to new markets as well.
Mm-hmm. Understand. So yeah, taking a step back for a minute. So why do we need flexible energy assets? What are flexible energy assets and what are the fundamental drivers behind them?
So I think my view of it would be they're basically assets that can respond very quickly to ramp up and down to match changes in supply and demand. And we need more of that because we're obviously moving to a world where we have more intermittent generation. Historically, a lot of this has obviously been provided by gas assets. If you look at the GB balancing mechanism, the majority of the offers in the BM are coming from gas assets. But as you move to a world where you have more intermittent generation and we retire a lot of those gas assets, you have this kind of growing need for flexibility. And I think that flexibility can be provided by a bunch of different kind of low carbon sources, and battery storage is obviously one of them.
What is the market structure that is necessary in order to support flexible markets? For example, in GB, we have different ancillary services, and batteries do have access to those. And that's a fundamental part of their revenue stacking. So what are other revenue streams that are required? And maybe provide some examples from different markets that you see supportive market structures.
Yes. So I think maybe just touching on the GB point, because GB is a really interesting market, because I think the reason we've had such a great success with storage is because of actually National Grid. Like if you think about back in sort of 2015, 2016, they scoped out a service called Enhanced Frequency Response. They then went to market because they knew they had a need for this service. And they then procured kind of 4 or 5 year long contracts for about 0.5 gigawatt of storage in 2017, 2018, that we're going to deliver that service, which was really forward thinking and innovative at the time. And then after that, they looked at what other services do they need to kind of complement that. So they then bought out Dynamic Firm Frequency Response for a number of years, where you could get multi-year contracts. They then moved to monthly. And then eventually they bought out the latest kind of fast acting frequency services that were dynamic containment, dynamic regulation, and dynamic moderation. So they kind of went through a process of identifying, as the generation mix changed and as frequency was deviating more frequently from 50 hertz, they needed faster services to help balance the system. And therefore, they kept kind of tweaking the services till they got to their latest suite. And I think that is what's really led in GB to the build out of sort of 4 gigawatts of storage that we have today, because we've always had frequency services in place that have been attractive in revenue, and National Grid has consistently procured them. If you look at other markets, a lot of the ancillary services aren't always accessible for storage. Where they are, they might not always be valuable, or storage will be competing with other kind of thermal assets in those markets because the response time isn't as fast. I think when you have a really, really quick response time that you have to deliver, the only people or assets that can deliver that are storage. But if you look at some markets where they have a slower response time, then storage is going to compete with traditional assets that are already participating in that market. And I think GB is a really unique example because National Grid has kind of scoped these ancillary service frequency contracts really just for battery storage.
Yes. So, yeah, certainly flexibility markets are essential in order to provide this merchant revenue stack component for batteries and storage more generally. But I feel also capacity markets are quite important to provide revenue stability long term, especially when it comes to bankability of projects. That might be quite relevant, right?
Yeah, and I think it probably depends on what market you're in. So if you look at GB, historically, the capacity market hasn't been a main revenue stream for storage. And the way I kind of think of it is it's almost like the cherry on top of a cupcake. It's the nice to have when the market price or the capacity market price is a certain level. But obviously, the way that storage is derated, it always means that they get significantly less than whatever clears in the market. I think that being said, if you look at the last few auctions, the price has actually been a lot higher than it has been previously. So I think the bit of the stack that it makes up is now greater than it was before. If you look at other markets like Italy, for example, I think they're going down a slightly different route when they look at long-term contracts. And if you take the view of Terna, the role that a long-term contract would play in that market would probably have a significantly greater proportion of the revenue stack to what we've seen in GB. So I think it depends on the market. And like you said as well, it probably depends on the risk appetite of the asset owner or the investor in the asset.
Going back to the structure of markets, what about policy support schemes that you have seen in different markets that have proved successful for the support of flexibility markets and storage? For example, I know in Southeast Europe there have been a couple of markets that have introduced contracts for difference, but I think that's quite different to what we have seen in most markets. Can you provide some examples of successful market design and policy support for storage and batteries?
Yeah, so I think there's maybe three things that I think about when I look at what does a good market have. And subsidies are obviously one of them. And I think the UK has been a great example of a country that has rolled out subsidies, whether it's CFDs or ROCs, that have led to a significant growth in renewable generation and consequently then lowered the costs of renewable generation so that more people can then invest in it because it's more affordable and accessible. I think the challenge with subsidies is how do you do it in a way that it doesn't distort the market? Because any kind of policy or government interaction with the market obviously has an impact on the market. So you need to think about how you can do it in a way that's the least sort of disruptive, but still the most helpful. And I think this is what we need to start talking about or thinking about at the moment, which is there's over 25 gigawatts of renewable assets in GB that are not incentivized to turn down when the price is negative. So how do you incentivize the right behavior? And then I think the second piece of that or strand of that is how do you incentivize the right behavior in the right place at the right time? So having some kind of locational signal or locational price that's reflective of generation and demand at a given point. And hopefully REMA will address some of this. So I think hopefully that second box will be ticked to some degree in the future. Until you do that, the challenge we have at the moment is we're kind of tweaking around the edges by bringing out a bunch of different smaller markets, almost like as band-aids, to try and plaster over this bigger issue that we have, which is the fundamental kind of market design. And I think lots of markets are going through this because the EU is also looking at their market design at the moment, which again includes locational pricing and subsidy support. Then I think the final piece is having the right signal in the right time at the right place, but also the right length. So having shorter settlement periods, which you can see in Australia and the US, really creates market volatility closer to real time. So as you add more renewable generation to the system, and as forecasts often change closer to real time, having that ability for flexible assets, whether that's storage or EVs or heat pumps or other forms of low carbon tech, to access or be able to monetize the value of their flexibility as you move closer to real time. And shorter settlement periods would be key for that. And I think Australia is a really, really good example of that because they've got around 30 gigawatts of solar, which is what, maybe three times what we have in the UK. And 25% of their wholesale prices are negative, but then a lot of them are followed by positive prices. So there's huge swings in the prices, which then obviously creates volatility in the system, which then means flexible assets can obviously build a really strong business case from.
Yeah, that's very useful. And talking about, looking at it from the other side, like what are some market failures or what are things that a regulator or a policymaker should avoid if they want to facilitate more storage and flexibility in a system?
I think the biggest failure would be not taking kind of like a holistic view of the market. And that's not just from the perspective of flexible assets. It's including renewable assets on subsidies. It's including price signals at the right time in the right place. It's including the future of the capacity market, the future of or the role of hydrogen, the role of long duration storage. All of that needs to come together. And I don't think you can have separate strategies. I think the biggest failure is having like siloed or individual strategies that focus on the build out of certain assets or the business case for certain assets or support for certain assets, but doesn't actually link them together. There needs to be some common thread that takes a holistic view that looks at the overall system benefits. And that's obviously really, really challenging to do. And I think that's what most markets are struggling with at the moment. But that's the point that we need to get to in order to enable an efficient and affordable energy transition.
And what about more innovative business models? PPAs will be key in order to provide this long-term revenue stability. Is this something that you see in the market or in different markets happening, PPAs for storage?
I don't think we've really seen it historically because the best thing to do in the past has been to put your asset in, at least in GB, has been to put your asset in a frequency market. So if you're doing that, you probably don't want a PPA because you just want to be able to access whatever the frequency price is at the time for that contract. And it wouldn't make sense to have a PPA. I think that being said, because those frequency markets are saturated now in GB, and if you look at the amount of storage online, I think we've got just over 4 gigawatts. And then the volume that National Grid is procuring in the market, which is anywhere between 1 to 2 gigawatts, there's a big difference or a big kind of oversupply of storage. And I think that's obviously led to a huge decrease in prices. And so asset owners or investors are starting to look at how do they kind of mitigate against some of this risk. And I think potentially a PPA is maybe one option, but the thing that people could go back to, and I think we sort of moved away from them, is floor contracts. So I think the first floor contract was maybe back in 2017, 2018, and the market then started to move away from floor contracts because of the fact that asset owners and investors became more comfortable in the business case for storage. But I think now, because of the way the market has moved and these ancillary services is not as lucrative as they were previously. The wholesale market, although is a deeper and more liquid market, is going to depend on the spreads and what's happening at any given time. And if you look at last year, wholesale spreads were significantly lower than they had been in previous years. So I think people might start to look back to how can they hedge or mitigate that risk in a floor or a tolling agreement or some kind of revenue certainty is obviously going to be key for that. So I think it's something that we're going to probably start to see as we move forward.
I would agree. And now focusing on batteries specifically as providers of flexibility, the current dominant design is lithium-ion batteries, usually 1 to 4 hours in duration. So what are the advantages and possibly what are the limitations of this technology?
I think the biggest advantage or selling point for me for a battery would be its speed of response. So as markets move or as the generation mix becomes more intermittent, frequency kind of deviates more than it does, you have less inertia on the system. And National Grid is a great example of a system operator that's identified this need for a really, really fast acting response for when something trips or something goes wrong on the system. And if you think back to, I think it was August 2019 when we had the frequency event and obviously batteries stepped in then. If you think in the last sort of 6 months, the Viking interconnector tripped, the French interconnector tripped, these events frequently happen. So having assets that can respond subsecondly and also accurately, I think batteries are very good at an accurate response, is something that traditional or thermal assets can't do.
Certainly. At the same time, there is quite a lot of discussion about services that batteries cannot provide, for example, inertia. And we'll be talking later on about some of the alternative technologies that could possibly fill that gap. But before we go that, I just wanted to check on the recent discussion on costs. So there are certain components and costs have grown significantly lately. So how do you see these trends in the market, especially when it comes to components and possibly any soft costs, development costs in different regions? Do you have any view or any insights on the outlook of costs?
So I think the cost side has probably got a lot of attention in the last year. And I don't think that's just the case for storage. I think we've also seen it in renewables as well, or at least definitely in wind with supply chain costs and inflation. But I think actually the biggest challenge that I would say we've had in the GB market, but I don't think this is just only applicable to GB, I do think it's in other regions as well, is the ability for people to have the right people on site to actually energize or make a site operational within the time frame that people were expecting. So I think it's really a people problem, not just a cost problem. And I think a really good example of that is if you think back to last year, the T-1 auction in the capacity market, we should have had between 1.5 to 2 gigawatts of storage come online by October last year, which was great. Like that would have doubled our capacity online at the time. And actually, I think only 20% of it came online. And these are assets that would have bid in March time to be ready to deliver in October. So in that window, you're really talking about, it's nothing to do with grid connections. It's nothing to do with necessarily supply chains. It's really to do with actually energizing a site within, you know, a 6 month window. And that was a real people problem because there wasn't the EPCs or there wasn't the people needed at the right time to be able to energize all of these sites. So I think there is a cost element to it. I think the cost element was really sort of a bump in the road last year, and I don't think that's a long-term trend. But I think the real challenge that we need to solve that people probably aren't talking about as much or enough is that actual the skills gap of being able to energize all of the sites that we're expecting to make operational in the next kind of 10 to 15 years. I guess what I'm trying to say is it's not just about having the money to be able to invest in renewables that then comes online. It's actually making sure all of that becomes operational.
So shifting now to the other side of the economics, so looking at the revenue stack, we already talked about the revenue stack for storage and batteries, but I wanted to also to ask a little bit about the evolution of the stack. So I suspect in many countries, what we will see is that initially batteries will depend on providing ancillary services and frequency response, which are the more high value services, but then move to more and more arbitrage. What is your insight on this and effectively the cannibalization impact in different markets? Is that something that you have witnessed already in certain markets?
So I think we've definitely witnessed this in GB, and I've kind of mentioned that earlier, the saturation of ancillary services, or in particular frequency services. I think we will see it in other markets as well, because when you think about ancillary services, at any given time, a system operator or a grid operator only needs to buy a certain amount. So the minute the install capacity of storage is greater than that amount, those assets need to look for revenue elsewhere. And if it's available in a wholesale or a real time or a other balancing market, that's great. But there's also going to be times where it's not, and therefore the frequency prices will be significantly lower than they were previously. So we've seen that in the UK. We haven't really seen that in any of the geographies yet. However, I think probably the next one is Texas. People talk about that a lot. It probably depends on what forecast you believe in terms of how much storage is going to come online by the end of this year. I think there's a few forecasts that range from sort of 3 gigawatts to 7 gigawatts. If it's 7 gigawatts, then their market will definitely be saturated this year. If it's 3 gigawatts, maybe it's a little bit more debatable. The difference in ERCOT, though, is that those battery assets are also competing against thermal assets as well. So it's not just the storage assets that are impacting the price. Japan also is an interesting one. I think they're definitely not reaching saturation yet because they've only just launched some new frequency services, but they'll be an interesting one to watch because a lot of people are talking about the Japanese market and the value in the Japanese market. So I think in any market, it's only an amount of time before it happens. And that kind of ability to then find value elsewhere is obviously going to be key.
Mm-hmm. Certainly. And now focusing on operations, I mean, Kraken Flex, you do monitoring and management of systems. So I would like to understand how important is software and how important is artificial intelligence possibly in order to get an optimal dispatch?
So I think because historically, if you've just been delivering a frequency service or an ancillary service, because that's where all the value is, it's a very different optimization problem to one where you're having to look across markets, forecast prices, and then decide what's the best market to be in at any given time. And then also appreciate that if you are allocating volume to one market, what does that lock you out of? And what does that mean that you can do later in the day? So it's that kind of also state of charge management of, if you do something now, how can you also make sure that you can do something later if there is an opportunity later? So I think it is a much greater software optimization problem now than it has been previously. This is definitely true for GB because if you look at the market, we have frequency services, we have reserve services that National Grid's brought out. So they've just brought out a new balancing reserve. They're going to bring out fast reserve and quick reserve and slow reserve. And then there's also DSO services, and there's the balancing mechanism, and then there's the day ahead and intraday market. So there's a bunch of markets to optimize across that we didn't used to have to do. You also have to remember that a lot of those markets have really strict technical operational requirements for participating in them. So it's not just about forecasting prices, but it's also about the risk of, if you do enter a certain market, you want to make sure that you can deliver, because if you don't, you won't get paid for it. So there's that side of it as well. So I think it's a very different optimization problem today than it was a few years ago. It's not just a software problem for storage or optimizers. I think it's also a software problem now for National Grid, because their system is changing and how the control room operates will have to change. And automating or dispatching a large number of distributed assets can't be done manually anymore. So I don't think it's just a software optimization problem for utilities or asset owners or traders. I also think there's a big piece around digitalization of the system operators or grid operators that are running the markets, because they also need to be taken on this journey, because we can optimize and dispatch assets, but we also need to know that the system operator in the balancing mechanism or whichever market that they run can also do the same as well on their end. And I think National Grid has obviously gone through a big process at the moment to look at how they can digitalize or automate some of their processes in the BM, which should make a difference to then again how assets bid into markets and where they see the value.
Of course. Yeah, you're perfectly right. And I mean, going back again to the operation from the developer point of view or the owner point of view, I would think that the collocation would make things even worse when it comes to complexity, because now they will have to optimize the dispatch of the renewable asset that is collocated with the battery. So how do you see this trend of increasing hybridization of assets?
I think co-location is a really interesting one because it's not a new concept, but I still think we're struggling to do it in quite a few countries. In some places, it doesn't necessarily make sense. I think in GB, it makes a lot of sense when you think about our grid connection queue. And if you imagine all of the solar in it and all of the storage in it, if you could almost like join them together or put them together, it would significantly change the length of the grid connection queue. So I think co-location makes a lot of sense, but the challenge is then technically how you deliver it. So I don't think the industry has really settled on a standard way of doing a co-located site. So what does a co-located site look like in terms of the setup, the design, how you connect to it?
Certainly. Yeah. So we've talked quite a lot about batteries, effectively, especially grid scale batteries. What about other technologies and flexibility assets? What are some top alternative technologies that could provide similar services to the system?
So I think storage will always have a really unique role to play in fast responding services like frequency services, because they can respond subsecondly, and they also can respond really accurately, and not all asset classes can do that. Most storage in the UK and also in other regions as well tends to be 1 to 2 hour in duration. Like that's what most people are building. So again, it will be good at that kind of short-term balancing. I think beyond that, there are other assets or technologies that have a role to play. I think flexibility from residential assets like electric vehicles and heat pumps will be a big one. I don't necessarily see them as competing with storage when it comes to frequency services. I don't think that would be the issue. I think when it comes to intraday balancing, they probably will both play in the balancing mechanism. But EVs and heat pumps are really good when you think about if you have a gigawatt of storage, for example, and it's 1 to 2 hours in duration, that's 1 to 2 gigawatt hours of energy. If you think about EVs and you have the equivalent, so 1 gigawatt of EVs, that's probably at any given time, depending on charging levels, it could be up to 7 hours of charging. So that's 7 gigawatt hours. So the potential for that to scale is huge. I just think it's an area that's really underutilized at the moment, but I definitely see flexibility from the demand side playing a huge role in alternative technologies that can participate in these markets.
Many thanks. And looking into the future, what would you say might be the most important enablers for more storage and flexibility in the system? And possibly what are some disruptors that might change and shift the paradigm?
So I think enablers are digitalization of the grid. We can't do the energy transition without digitalization. So looking at the technology that we use on the distribution network and the system operator and joining the two together, so we've got this kind of overall efficient co-optimized system view. I think what would really disrupt the market and also help the market is obviously flexibility from residential assets. People, when they buy an EV or a heat pump, they're not doing it so that they can make money or it can be optimized in the balancing mechanism. They're doing it because you want a car or you want a warm home. But through doing those two things or investing in those assets, you then have a bunch of flexibility that can be unlocked. Because most people, I think, if you buy an EV, you charge it overnight, you don't necessarily care at what point through the night your car is charged. You just want to know when you wake up in the morning and go to work at 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock, your car will be charged at 90%, 100%, whatever your preference or parameters are. I think letting software platforms or having the ability to have a system where we're connected to all of these assets and then customers basically submit preferences on an app or through whatever the mechanism is, and then software providers or platforms have that ability to decide when is the cheapest time for National Grid in the balancing mechanism to charge your car, or when is the cheapest time on the day ahead or intraday market to charge that car. And I think that's a part of the system that has the potential to unlock so much value, not just for the system operator and the overall system, but actually for consumers and the reward or the value that they can reap from that, from having cheaper charging, basically.
Charlotte, it was my pleasure discussing with you today. Thank you so much for sharing your very interesting insights.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
And to all of our listeners, thank you for joining us today on Energy Unplugged.
That was Evangelos Gaziz, Aurora's head of Southeast Europe, talking to Charlotte Johnson, Chief of Staff and Global Head of Markets at Kraken Flex Limited. Do keep an eye on our feed for more in-depth conversations with senior members of the energy industry. The best way to do this is to subscribe or follow using your preferred podcast platform.